Any family that builds a last thing that the world knows about, you'll typically find somebody all the way at the top that's got a few screws missing. A little bit crazy, wired, maybe a bit of a temper, maybe ambitious, maybe they think very highly of themselves. And Joseph Kennedy qualifies as one of those people. And when you hear about what this man did, let me just give you an example. At 25 years old, this guy decides to nominate himself to be the bank president, youngest ever to do it, because they didn't want him to become one of those powerful bankers because he was a Catholic. He did it himself. He ends up becoming friends with FDR. They become so close to each other that eventually he convinces FDR to make him the ambassador to UK. I remember when I'm getting my Series 7 license in LA, they told me, you know who was the founder of SEC? A man named Joseph Kennedy. He convinced FDR that if I help you get the new deal done, you announce that I'm the commissioner of SEC moving forward. Boom, gets done. He's the first SEC. By the way, when they allowed for alcohol to be sold in America, you know who got the first license to sell liquor? Who do you think? Joseph Kennedy. And aside from that, you know how you judge a great last name, a great family legacy? When you duplicate the most people who move up in rankings in politics, business, media. Watch how many people with the last name Kennedy moved up to the highest ranks of politics. Ready? John F. Kennedy, youngest son, becomes a president. Robert F. Kennedy, his son, becomes the attorney general. And if it wasn't for him getting assassinated, he would have also been a president. Teddy Kennedy, his other son, becomes a senator for nearly 46 years. One of his grandsons, the son of RFK Sr., Joseph Kennedy II, becomes a congressman. And Joseph Kennedy II has a son called Joseph Kennedy III that also becomes a congressman. Patrick Kennedy, the son of Ted Kennedy, also ends up becoming a congressman. And by the way, I can say a million other things about him. We're going to talk about him here today. This guy was worth $500 million in the 1950s and decided to become one of the most powerful last names ever. Some will say the most famous last name America's ever had. Today, we're going to learn about Joseph Kennedy. If you get value out of this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. To learn who Joseph Kennedy is, you have to learn about his grandparents. So, Joseph Kennedy's grandparents immigrated to the U.S. from Ireland during the potato famine. They traveled here on what was called a coffin ship because of how many people died during the trip. It was said that sharks were constantly following these boats because of how many dead bodies were thrown overboard. Joseph's grandfather got a job as a dock worker at the Boston Harbor. They have two daughters and one son named PJ. Shortly after the father dies from illness, and the Kennedy name is held by one male who is an infant to a poor single mother, and the youngest of three children. So the Kennedy last name could have been like this close from never existing, because imagine a single mother, three kids, he's got a son named PJ, father dies, what do you do here? This is when everything turns around, because the mother takes out a loan to start a small grocery shop and is able to make a decent living. Meanwhile, PJ works on the docks from a young age and works at the local saloon. By working at the saloons, he starts to become friends with local politicians and realizes these are great places to network with influential people. When PJ turns 18, he asks his mother for a loan to start his own saloon. PJ achieves major inroads with the Boston politicians and eventually gets elected to Massachusetts House of Representatives. PJ obtains an upper middle class living and has four children. His only son is called Joseph Kennedy. Few things we need to know about Joseph Kennedy that, you know, if you haven't read about him, he would be always angry if people claim that he came from a wealthy family. You are where you are because your family last name, PJ, and what they did and all this stuff. He always wanted to kind of be like, no, I did it myself. I'm self-made. No one helped me out. It was all me. He didn't want to do that right at the young age, especially when coming up. He was determined to make a name for himself and get out from underneath his father's shadow. So Joe gets him to Harvard with poor grades because of his father's connection. Didn't like it. After graduating, Joe decides to go into banking. He said banking can take a man anywhere because it's involved in all things. Initially, Joe has a difficult time finding employment at a bank because Irish Catholics were discriminated against. But by 1912, Joe decides to become a state bank examiner instead and figures that it will allow him to meet bank managers and impress them with his knowledge. During this time, Joe extensively learns how banks and everything related to finances work. Roughly a year after he started the job, he learned that a small bank that his father was a major shareholder in was about to undergo a hostile takeover called Columbia Trust Bank. Joe contacts all of his friends and family members, asking them for a loan to help him buy back the bank. The money he borrowed combined with his father's shares was enough to make it happen. So by 1914, at the age of 25, Joe Kennedy names himself the president of Columbia Trust Bank, declaring himself the youngest bank president alive to the local newspaper. Within just a few months, Joe increases the bank profitability by 20%. Now that Joe had a bank, he was able to loan himself money to buy stocks and real estate. He does very well at first, but lost all of his gains when the Lusitania was sunk and war became imminent for the U.S. This made Joe much more cautious in his investing strategy. Joseph becomes manager of Hayden Stone Investment Bank. He was making good money, but quickly realized that the way to make real good money was to become an expert in an industry, start a business, and then sell it. He learned that because his bosses, Hayden and Stone, did that with industries like oil and steel. So Joe was determined to find an industry to follow this business model. So by 1923, he starts a business offering banking services to clients and managing their money. By 1926, Joe makes himself $2 million, largely because he was very good at finding ways to benefit from the highly unregulated stock market. Then comes Hollywood, because in 1926, he decides it's time to take his big risk. He puts aside $1 million for his family and uses $1 million to buy Film Booking Offices of America, FBO. He believed Hollywood was the place to be if you wanted to build a highly profitable movie business. Joe moves to Hollywood and starts rearranging the finances of the company. He cuts costs and puts together a model where FBO would produce cheap Western cowboy movies quickly. This genre was very popular and profitable. He focused on distributing his films to small theaters. After 1 year, the market becomes oversaturated with this model, and Joe decides the new way to be profitable is to cast a star with a well-known scriptwriter. Joe targets Gloria Swanson, who was the most famous actress in Hollywood at the time. She was in financial trouble, and they made a deal where he would manage her finances if she agreed to be in his movies. Joe has an infamous affair with Swanson. He puts together a company called Gloria Productions and to produce her films, and unbeknownst to her, every time he bought her a gift or he redecorated her studio bungalow, he charged it to her. So it's kind of like she would come up and say, "Babe, you're so sweet. Look what, oh, this is so amazing. But oh, don't worry, I love you," you know, all this stuff. But the reality is Gloria was paying for the whole thing the entire time. 1928, Joe arranged a merger with the powerhouse Radio Keith Orpheum, RKO, and sold his FBO stock for $5 million. Joe sold all of his stock in July of 1929 and shorted the market. The Great Depression started 2 months later. Joe started putting his money into real estate. Joe was very rich at this time, but he was becoming increasingly concerned with the social instability in America and believed FDR was the only presidential candidate who could get the American economy back on track. So he becomes a major donor and personal friend of FDR and is considered a significant player in helping FDR get elected. Joe was under the belief that he would receive a prominent political position for helping FDR win, but gets the cold shoulder for several months. FDR did not want to seem too close with Joe because he had a reputation as a stock manipulator. And by the way, I want you to think about it. You ever seen the movie Wolf of Wall Street with the whole story of Jordan Belfort, right? Imagine Jordan Belfort. He did what he did when regulation was here and it was high. What would a Jordan Belfort look like in the 20s? Think Joseph Kennedy, think Jordan Belfort, but think low regulation. What kind of money can be made in an environment like that? Think about that. That's the era he was a part of, so he can get away with murder when it comes down to finances. In 1933, to appease Joe, FDR allowed Joe to be the first in line to be granted a liquor import license. When the prohibition was lifted, Joe started a company called Somerset Importers, which was the exclusive importer for Hague Scotch whiskey and served as a cash cow for decades. But Joe was not satisfied. He wanted to be the chairman of the newly formed SEC. At first, FDR laughed at the idea, but FDR was having a difficult time getting his New Deal legislation passed. FDR was put in a position where he needed Joe's help to persuade the Republicans that the legislation would not destroy business. Joe was a Democrat, but he was widely respected as somebody who deeply understood business and the market, kind of like a modern-day Jamie Dimon. FDR and Joe came to an understanding where Joe would get the position if the New Deal was passed. By 1934, the New Deal passed, and guess what happened to Joseph Kennedy? He was officially the first SEC chairman. The media freaked out, saying it was like setting a wolf to guard a flock of sheep, and FDR said, "It takes a thief to catch a thief." It's kind of like the movie Catch Me If You Can with Frank Abagnale. Remember how he was able to manipulate and steal money and eventually ended up getting the job to catch the bad guys because he's like, "Nobody knows how to do this better than me." That's kind of what he's saying. It takes a thief to catch a thief. Joe outlawed all of the practices he used to make money in the stock market. Many of these laws are in place today. So think about it. Everything he did to make all his money officially was illegal, but he had the advantage to make it. And then he says, "Hey, everybody wants to compete with me. You can no longer do this." By 1936, Joe is so powerful that FDR needs his help to get reelected, and by this time, Joe had massive influence over the media because he has the most powerful journalist in America on his payroll, Arthur Kroc, and was close with William Randolph Hearst. Joe helps FDR win again with his financial and media influence, but in return, wants to be either Treasury Secretary or Ambassador to the UK, a position that several former presidents held. Prior to giving Joe the position he wanted, FDR assigned him to a position that he needed him to win. Joe was made the chair of the United States Maritime Commission with the assignment of increasing the fortune of the United States States shipping industry. The biggest problem was the uncompliant union members on these ships, but Joe tells the ship captain to have them arrested so Joe succeeds in making the industry profitable and getting the unions under control. By 1937, he becomes the ambassador to the UK instantaneously as Joe takes his position and moves to the UK. Germany starts taking over territories. Joe is extremely anti-interventionist and constantly speaks on the behalf of the US, saying that it would not intervene. Joe puts a lot of effort into persuading Chamberlain to stay out of the conflict, and he openly stated that Berlin would fall and Germany was likely to win the war. He thought that America should withdraw support to Britain. Joe even attempted to back channel with the Nazis behind FDR's back, trying to make a deal where they stopped pushing forward after taking a certain amount of territory. After Chamberlain resigned and the U.S. entered a war, Joe was forced to resign. Joe was widely considered a front runner to be the next president of the United States, but this miscalculation destroyed his political career. Joe's biggest fear later came true when his two oldest sons joined the army, eager to fight in the war. John was the commander of torpedo boat PT-109. The boat sank after being rammed by a Japanese ship in Blanket Strait in North Solomon Islands. JFK was awarded a Purple Heart for his bravery in saving crew members. Joe made sure it was widely covered in the media and had a movie made about it. Now, Joe's oldest son, Joe Jr., was not used to being outshined by John, his youngest brother, and started accepting the riskiest missions possible to try to regain the spotlight. This eventually led him to being killed when he was flying a plane loaded with explosive, where the mission was to eject from the plane and let it fly into German bunkers. The explosive were not wired properly and detonated prematurely. This crushed Joe because Joe Jr. was his favorite son and he had intentions of making him the president. By 1946, Joe said to John F. Kennedy, his youngest son, Joe's dead, so you have to run for Congress. Joe went on to channel all of his political ambitions through John F. Kennedy. At the same time, he bought the Chicago Merchant Mart in 1946 to serve as the new cash guy. He bought it for $13 million, which later on in 1998 sold for $625 million. Today, it's worth roughly $1.7 billion. He made it instantly profitable by renting the vendor's booths to merchants and hosting big events. In 1947, John F. Kennedy won the Democratic primary for the 11th Congressional District in Boston, Massachusetts, where he served until 1953. Joe strategically waited until the popular Eisenhower was out of the office until going for the presidency. In 1960, Joe made a deal with Chicago mobster Sam Giancana that he would get his son Bobby to stop prosecuting the mafia if they helped JFK win Illinois. JFK wins, and Joe forces JFK to make Bobby the attorney general. Bobby goes after the mafia with the full force of the DOJ, and the brothers managed to upset several of the most powerful institutions in the world, ended up costing both of their lives. So at this point, the Kennedy family may be the most powerful family in the world, because the father is, in some estimation, he was the fifth richest man in the world, Joseph Kennedy. His youngest son is a president. His other son, RFK, is the attorney general. They have so much power, so much influence. But then 9 months after his son gets elected, he has a stroke. And then all of a sudden, RFK pushes the envelope a little bit too much with the mob. His brother, John F. Kennedy, gets assassinated. Some blame CIA, some blame the mob. There's a lot of, you know, speculation with LBJ being involved, whatever it may be. John F. Kennedy gets assassinated. And then when RFK is running, he gets assassinated. Joseph, the patriarch, witnesses four of his kids die before he dies in 1969. His oldest son, which he wanted to be a president, Joseph. His youngest son, John F. Kennedy. His other son, RFK. His daughter, Kathleen, dies in 1969. His wife ends up living till 104 years old. But the Kennedy last name, till today, is recognized as being one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful last name in the history of America. So, you know, when somebody listens to this, you know, the average person may say, oh, are you kidding me? I would never want to live that life and never would want to go through. Of course, the average person is going to say that. But do you think he knew that was going to be taking place? This was a man that had plans of having his three sons become presidents back to back to back. When they were kids, they would have dinner and say, who's going to be the president first? There was a certain feeling and vibe he gave to his kids to believe that they were capable of doing something like this. So imagine, what if the stroke doesn't happen? Is he able to stay in the ears of his kids to help them make better decisions? Would he have told Robert to not push as hard, keep your promises, step back a little bit, you're being a little too aggressive? Would that feedback may have changed? If he doesn't have the stroke, is John F. Kennedy able to live a longer life? Is Robert able to live a longer life? What happens to this family? Would the elites and the establishment allow them to have like almost like a nepotism or a monarchy family where Kennedys are running America? Would that be good for America? Would it not be? Nobody knows. But this is history. And And when somebody in any family you look at that ends up becoming a family that you read about, we read about, you will always, going back to my first point, find somebody who was super ambitious, super driven, who had a clear vision for the family, who had a drive, maybe a little bit of a chip, a couple screws missing, and he was just not willing to slow down. He or she was not willing to slow down and be relentless. And this man definitely qualifies as someone like that. If you got value out of this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And I got another video titled, Why Non-Establishment Presidents Get Killed. If you've never seen this before, click here to watch it. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.